I don't think that I need to introduce Peter Evanson. I think everybody knows who Peter is. As you know, Peter has been part of this industry for a very, very long time. He's been a great industry figure, a great leader, and we are delighted that he agreed to be our keynote speaker along with Mario Cordero at lunch today. And I would like to thank Krista for reaching out to Peter. I reached out to him as well, but I think I needed Krista's help to close the deal, as they say, and actually she's a deal maker. So here is another proof of her closing skills. So Peter, thank you very much for being with us. You can talk to us about retirement. You can talk to us about life in general. But anyway, you all know Peter, an amazing industry figure, an amazing leader. So frankly, we are humbled to have him with us today, and thank you for joining us. So if I may ask you to the podium.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm not quite sure what to say after such a nice introduction, but I want to thank Capital Link and Citi, who have asked me to come and share my insights on the global shipping industry. So I've only been retired for about 6 weeks, so I haven't hopefully lost too much of it. But I especially was pleased to come today because I get the chance to share the lectern with some distinguished luminaries, including one gray-haired one, Rich Dumoulin, who we're honoring today and who I think is richly deserving of this award. So, Rich, let me be the first to say thank you. So in the spirit of famous gray-haired people, I thought I would invoke Albert Einstein, who famously said, "If I had 1 hour to save the world, I would spend 55 minutes defining the problem and only 5 minutes finding the solution." So lucky for you, I don't have an hour. Instead, only about 15 minutes to talk about the state of the global shipping industry. But I'm going to try to use the same ratio that Einstein had in mind. So working through my checklist, does the shipping industry deliver safe and efficient transport of goods? Let's talk about safety first. Check. The industry has made huge progress and continues to make great strides in lowering its lost time injuries, reducing environmental pollution, and of course, most importantly, the improvements that have extended to the shipyards. In fact, we're even getting better in ship demolition. Efficiency. Yes, the industry, as the commissioner points out, moves over 90% of international transport, but no, I'm here to tell you that I don't think that we run our business efficiently, and I'll return to that subject. The second point, does it earn a decent rate of return for providing transportation services around the world? No. And therein lies one of the first problems of sustainability. Three, is the industry susceptible to disruptive technologies? Yes, and I think it's more than most people in this room realize, and therein lies another problem of sustainability for the shipping world. More about that in a minute, but I think that things may change rather quickly and rapidly in the future, in the next few years. When I joined TK as CEO 5 years ago, I said I think it would change more in the next 5 years than it had in the previous 10, and I think that proved correct. And when Kenneth Vid, who took over from me, came in, I said, it's only going to accelerate, Kenneth. And I think that our industry is going to change rather rapidly, much as we see today in autos and in trucks. So the fourth is, where are we in the state of ocean freight transport now? Well, shipping is what we call a late cyclical industry. And right now, it looks like we're coming out of, finally, the hangover that we and the world sustained in the financial crisis, which is coming up on its 10-year anniversary in 2018. So when you travel around the world, here we have lots of different names for it, but in Europe and especially Australia, they call it TFC. And they've just got that acronym, the financial crisis. Well, for us, as a lot of you in this room know, a lot of demand was lost in the TFC. In tankers, when in 2008 we were transporting about 44 million of the 84 million barrels consumed, we lost about 10% of that oil that was transported at sea. And it hasn't come back really to the U.S. or Europe. In dry bulk, we lost a lot of cargo as commodity prices dove lower. So it's very interesting that we saw iron ore transport at record levels, but coal transport is still seeing declines. So overall, it isn't a good picture. If someone had told me that you would have record iron ore exports from Port Hedland in Australia and record iron ore exports from Brazil and asked me to say what would Capesize rates be, it would start with a 2, as in 20,000 to 30,000. So what a surprise, not even a year ago, to see it at $2,000 a day. And that is, of course, a function of coal. But now in dry bulk, I wasn't here for the panel this morning, we're seeing some amazing turnarounds. But for me, it starts with the prices. So iron ore over $90 last week, and met coal being up almost 100%, these are good times that will flow down to shipping. So it looks like we're finally coming out of the long trough caused by the TFC. So where are we today? Well, I've shared a few panels with Martin Stopford, and I think Martin has it right. Martin likes to talk about how and contrast where we are today with 1966, 50 years ago. So Rich, you're somebody in the room who can understand this, clearly. He makes parallels between today and then. If you go back to 1966, you had containerization, which was about to eclipse tramp and traditional pallet shipping, which dominated liners. Indeed, it began the era of specialized ships, which totally annihilated general cargo shipping with its multi-decks and inefficient port time. In 1966, the first VLCC was delivered, and today we have specialized carriers everywhere. Car transport, forestry transport, newspaper transport, and so many different kinds of bulk transport sizes. So the ends of the 60s and 70s also saw the end of the time charter. As the surplus of ships caused cargo owners to forego time charters in favor of spot charters. Obviously, the greatest example of that was, of course, crude oil tankers. But if we fast forward to today, we see it happening in LNG, where the surplus of ships and changing technology of the ships means that the LNG cargo owners are foregoing or shortening the long-term contracts that have traditionally been part of that. So we're seeing specialized ships lose their long-term contracts. And I haven't even gotten to liner transport. So let's talk a little bit about liner transport. Sea trade growth is clearly slowing, and we're seeing a regional trade change away from the OECD toward non-OECD. So once we had 5% world GDP growth, but as the Commissioner Cardero says, now we have a much lower, 2.5%. And that, of course, hurts world trade, which was a multiplier. So lots of folks like to talk about the Silk Road Renaissance. That is to say, the land transportation of goods from China to Europe through Russia. And I think that's interesting. But I want to talk about something that Commissioner Cordero brought up, which I think is far bigger. Something that he brought up but may not have caught your eye happened about a year ago. Amazon entered into the ocean transport business. Amazon is expanding its operation so it doesn't just send items around the world, it ships them too. The retailer's Chinese subsidiary last January was awarded a license by the Federal Maritime Commission, as you heard, to operate as an ocean freight forwarder or a non-vessel owning common carrier. That's marking the first step Amazon is making into this $350 billion ocean shipping market. And we all know what happens when Amazon steps in. In addition to shipping their own goods, because they're an NVOCC, Amazon China can legally be an ocean transport intermediary and allow itself to ship goods to the U.S. by boat for other companies. The license is just half the battle for Amazon. It'll take months or a few years for this company to actually commence shipping operations. But the move makes sense, and it parallels what they're doing with planes and trucks. Ocean-bound shipping, as we know on the liner side, is cheap at the moment. And while the option may not be much to, may not mean much to sellers in the United States, imagine if you're a Chinese firm who can't shell out for your own shipping or expensive air shipping. Amazon can do it for you. As one article said, and I quote, ocean shipping might not be as flashy as drone deliveries, but it's a move by Amazon to stay on top of the game in an increasingly competitive market. Alibaba, which was also mentioned, is making inroads into the U.S., but Amazon's move could undercut the China retail behemoth, allowing manufacturers to sell directly to American consumers without a tortured delivery process. And that gets me back to efficiency. It's in the software and the logistics that we need to make improvements in the global shipping industry, not the hardware. But that isn't where I see the industry concentrating their efforts. We're still concentrating on the hardware, the ships that are hugely capital intensive. In tankers, we talk about eco ships and powering them with LNG. In bulkers, it's Valley Maxes, as well as eco ships. Don't you still have some, Robert, or is he gone? In liner companies, bigger is better with 15 to 20,000 TEU vessels. And we still have an outdated broker network, John Hans in the room, that's inefficient but profitable. Did anyone notice what shipping stock hit a 52-week high today? It was Clarkson's, now with a market cap of $1 billion. So don't tell me software doesn't have value. But don't tell me it can't be disrupted either. So I don't think we're looking in the right places for efficiency. Again, I agree with Martin, who says the challenge is to change a transport system which, using a 19th century neoclassical model, is poor for the needs of the 21st century transport market. But lest you think I'm too negative, let me bring you back to the present. The trend is our friend in terms of shipping cycles. The FTC I mentioned earlier, we will regress back up to the mean from where we are today, which is well below the mean. And we all know that ship ordering is down and demand is growing. Shipyards are not overly discounting to get orders. And why is that? It isn't because the banks won't let them do it, in my opinion. It's because it won't make a difference. We still have too much capacity and people aren't going to order. So the financial returns are poor and it's hard to attract new capital to the sector. In my opinion, that's good and necessary. When we have too much capital thrown at this sector, the returns go down. And we all know investors were burned and ships are being scrapped well before their physical life. This is a function of a few factors, but every single one is disturbing. So, in my opinion, let's starve the industry of capital and let returns go up. And that's something in the last few years at TK we did. When we went out to buy tankers, we bought on the water tankers. We didn't order them. But when will returns go up? I'm not sure there will be as much speculation in this industry as there has been in the past. Folks have been burned, and they're concerned with the disruptive technology I've been talking about. Instead, investors are going to wait until they see real growth before investing. Better to come a little late than too early. And what about all this financial speculation in shipping? Is it good for the long-term fundamental and industry returns? I would argue no. It inherently creates short-termism, and building transport systems that are sustainable and efficient are not a product of speculative finance. When I was a banker, and so this is 15 years ago, I had a ship owner who said to me, operating a ship is something terrible I do between buying it and selling it. I think that speculation in fixed assets is on its way out. Instead, I think the future is about building transport systems that are sustainable and efficient. And I think this will happen in the future, just as it's happening in land transport. We may even get driverless ships. The classification societies like DNV are already showing the way. But it's going to take a different model, one that will involve integrated systems, big data, using technology to eliminate these inefficiencies in the transport system. And it's going to go back to the 50s of involving cargo owners with shipping companies in a more cooperative way. Think Apple and Foxconn. If the industry does this right, we will have a beautiful fleet of smart chips talking with cargo customers as well as competitors, something that the alliances don't do, integrated fleet management, and much higher utilization. So I see a future for shipping that's a positive one. So that's some food for thought while you put some food in your stomach. Thank you very much.